another clean sweep over the holiday weekend. Saints start things off on Thursday, beating the Atlanta Falcons. The Tigers demolish the Texas A&M Aggies to finish 12-0, winning the West and heading to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. And the Raging Cajuns shortly thereafter in a nail-biter over Louisiana Monroe gets it done to improve to 10-2, and they will head off to play in the Sun Belt Conference championship game. Three teams reaching their goals. Three teams with a whole lot to play for as the season winds down. We'll recap it all today, Monday, December 2nd, 2019.
See Stephon Sullivan check in as a receiver. Terrace Marshall still coming off that foot injury against Vanderbilt. Sullivan kind of taking his place at the wideout spot. And the handoff, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Shot out of a cannon up the middle. In the Gator territory. 30, 25, 20. Brought down from behind at about the 7-yard line of Florida. Hey now!
Saints leading it 10-6, 2 minutes left in the second quarter. The Saints coming up here on a third down and one from the Falcons' 30-yard line.
Yeah, Taysom Hill in there. Of the seven rushes for the Saints so far, only two of them gained over 1 yard.
Hill takes it. He's going to run straight ahead. First down, and Moore breaks free. 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown. And how about that? Both Saints touchdowns by Taysom Hill. He also blocked the punt earlier, and that was like a hot knife through butter. He went right up the middle for 30 yards.
First and goal at the 6. Out of the gun, they give it to Johnson, who gives it back to DeAndre Hopkins, who pitches it to Deshaun Watson, running down the sidelines and running in for the touchdown. Oh my goodness, DeAndre Hopkins with the option pitch to Deshaun Watson and a touchdown for the Texans. Some razzle-dazzle gives him a 27-9 lead.
En route to a win over the New England Patriots in week 13 of the NFL, which caps off tonight with Monday Night Football. As we're coming down the stretch run, and tonight it's Minnesota at Seattle. Saints fans, take note of that one. That's significant. The Falcons, the 49ers, thank you, Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens get the win. Now setting up a monster of a Sunday game in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome as the 49ers at 10-2 taking on the New Orleans Saints at 10-2. With home field advantage still lurking, and the Saints with the easier remainder of the schedule as compared to what the 49ers and the Seahawks have. So buckle up. Meanwhile, wow, what a night. What a performance. What a we got you back for this one. Never have I seen two teams that were so close a year ago be so wide apart now. LSU thoroughly demolished Texas A&M. They weren't in the ball game at all. They had no shot. LSU took their foot off the pedal late in the third and cruised to a 50-7 win. 12-0, number one in the AP poll, number one in the coaches poll, and we'll find out what happens tomorrow as far as the playoff committee poll is concerned. All the big boys won and won handily. Ohio State over Michigan, Clemson over South Carolina, Georgia over Georgia Tech. So no troubles with them. Upset City as Auburn with two pick sixes beats Alabama. Bye-bye, Crimson Tide. You're gone. Meanwhile, though, LSU. Coach O, after the ball game, happy to be 12-0, but we're moving on. More to accomplish.
And the guys in there are happy. We're happy we beat Texas A&M. We're happy we beat 12-0. We're going to enjoy this 24 hours, a 24-hour rule, and then on to Georgia, where we want to go play in a big SEC title game, which means a lot to our university and means a lot to our football team.
It does. I think the defense, as we said beforehand, boy, they took it to heart. They saw them drop from number one to number two strictly based upon the fact that LSU's defense wasn't up to par and wasn't up to the snuff of Ohio State. So, Coach O, where did the D improve for the A&M game?
You know, I thought we rushed the passer very well. We dialed up some new blitzes. We put pressure on the quarterback. We didn't allow them to beat us one-on-one. I thought our DBs made some tremendous plays on the football. This is overall a tremendous night, overall package. What a difference a year makes.
What a difference. And Dave Aranda drew one up, and the players on the defensive side got after it. Now you've really got a complete team based upon what we've seen. The kicking game, Cade York was spectacular. Spectacular. The offense, well, kind of all started. Not a cooler moment than the senior tribute. Then last but certainly not least, or should I say save the best for last, Joe Burrow came out, standing ovation from over 100,000. Take note, Raging Cajun, lack of fans. Over 100,000 in attendance. And Joe paid a tribute to LSU, the state of Louisiana, with his jersey that was spelled B-U-R-R-E-A-U-X. So, Joe, tell us about the new Burrow jersey.
Yeah, so it came to me kind of early in the week, and I went to our equipment guys to see if we could get it done. You know, I thought it would just be an awesome tribute to the state, to the university, and you know, I think it was great.
It was great. The fans absolutely loved it. They love Joe Burrow, and what a season. What a season. What a player. What an attitude. What a leader. What a competitor. He checks all the boxes. He checks all the boxes, and he says, you know what? Yeah, this game against Georgia is very important.
We're not buying it. We want an SEC championship as much as we want a national championship. You know, we feel like we've worked for it, and you know, it's all going to come to a point this Saturday.
When asked if LSU, Ed Orgeron was asked if LSU loses to Georgia, did he feel like they're still in the playoffs? And he goes, we're not even talking about that. We're going to win. We're going to beat Georgia. We're going down there to play our best to beat them, and then we'll let the chips fall where they may. Kirby Smart on an SEC championship teleconference call yesterday was asked the question about how do you slow down this LSU offense?
Where do you want me to start? I mean, because I only got 30 minutes, so it's all over. I mean, the running back is best. I mean, he's one of the most powerful, explosive. I mean, he does an unbelievable job. He was really good against us last year. But he has been a really good player. It all starts with the quarterback. Their offensive line protects really well, and they've got probably the best group of wideouts, size, speed-wise, that you could ever imagine. So, I mean, when you start with the offense, you can start at any location you want.
Very well said. Top offense against the top defense in the SEC. We'll see when push comes to shove what happens there. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate will join us. Ed Orgeron had a press conference today, said some interesting things. We'll recap some of that. Nick Fontenot will join us as well to talk about the Raging Cajuns, a 31-30 win over ULM to improve to 10-2. Did you see pictures of Boone, North Carolina today? They had a shot of the stadium. Snow everywhere. Everywhere. Billy Napier, very proud to get that 10th win.
You know, this group of people, and when I say that, not just the players, you know, we got hundreds of people that work, directly affect our football program. And for them to be able to come back here the rest of their life and say they were a part of that 2019 team that won 10 games for the first time in school history is a pretty special deal.
It is a very, very special deal, without question, without doubt. In fact, Jacques Boudreau, one of the star Raging Cajuns, talked about his last game at Cajun Field.
I mean, obviously, I'm a senior, and I didn't want to have my last moment on Cajun Field to be something that was, you know, was going to reflect down on myself or down on the team. You know, I want to do everything I possibly could to put my team in the best position to be successful. And if that's what it takes, and that's what I have to do. And you know, those guys, the coaches, have a tremendous amount of trust in me. And I'll just go out there and I'll give my all for them, man. You know, those are my brothers. Those are my coaches. That's an extension of my family. And whatever it is, at the end of the day, I will do whatever I have to do to be successful, to put my team first. For my team to be successful, I'll do whatever I have to do.
Well said. And, you know, George is going back to the SEC championship game for the third year in a row. The Raging Cajuns are heading back to the Sun Belt Conference title game for the second year in a row. And here's Jacques Boudreau again on going back to Boone.
I mean, obviously, it's a tremendous opportunity. You know, we went to Boone last year and we weren't successful. And I think throughout the year, you know, always that's always on your shoulder, thinking about that. And we're going to try to go down there and we're going to do exactly what we need to do to hopefully win the game. You know, nobody prepares to lose a football game, man. Nobody does. And we understand that those guys are a good outfit, but I like to think we're a good outfit too. And I think it's going to be a great game. I'm really looking forward to playing those guys again. They're tremendous competitors, and we have some tremendous competitors on our football team as well. Can't wait to press up against those guys, man.
Here's the times to remember. Saturday, 11 a.m., UL versus App State. Saturday, 3 p.m., LSU versus Georgia. Pre-game show starts at 1 right here on 103.7 The Game. And the Saints go for their 11th win in their massive showdown with the 49ers. High noon inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Three teams, all three have won their conferences, won their divisions. All three still playing in postseason games of magnitude and significance. What a year it has been. Ed Orgeron touched on just about everything during his press conference today. A 12-0 regular season, Georgia and the SEC championship, records broken in 2019, recruiting, and Joe Brady's future. Brooks Cabina will join us next to talk about it all here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, they're going to be excited about it, but this is a mature team. And, obviously, it's an honor to be in the game, to play for the SEC championship. That's what you want when you come to school here. So it's going to be a great game. It'll be a great atmosphere. So our guys understand the magnitude of it, but I really have confidence in this team's mental approach that is the next game up.
That was Ed Orgeron on the SEC teleconference call promoting the SEC championship game, which is at 3 p.m. Central Time in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, LSU versus Georgia. Brooks Cabina will be there. He's everywhere with the Tigers for the Advocate. He joins us now. Brooks, thanks for the time, buddy. How have you been, man?
Oh, man, you know, this is the time of year last year where the season was over, so I got more work to do, and glad to do it.
That's right. Ed Orgeron said it's great to have a press conference today. That's awesome.
He beat Tom Herman.
Yeah, he beat Tom Herman. He beat Jimbo Fisher. He beat Nick Saban. There's a lot of that he should be proud about. And when asked, do you think you've been a little, you know, would have beat your chest in the past? He said, probably so. But he is mature, but he sure beat those ghosts that a lot of people thought very highly of in the past.
Yeah, I think he's answered all the questions anybody ever had about him. And they're 12-0 and chasing the championship, and that's what he was asked to do. And I think if you know, you were looking at this a couple of years ago, we've talked about this even before the Alabama game, after the Alabama win, you know, leading into all of these things. I mean, I've written stories about that, about how he's proven that last year whenever they won 10 games and went to the Fiesta Bowl and won that. It certainly has proven some people wrong in that capacity.
no question about that. 50-7. Was that the most impressive win of the year for LSU, top to bottom?
That was the most impressive win I've covered with LSU. I mean, they've beaten teams soundly before, but I mean, I was having to go back and talk to some of the LSU staffers about what were the biggest beatdowns in LSU history in conference play. And, you know, it didn't breach the 62-0 trio that they had against Tulane in the 50s and 60s, but it was getting pretty dang close. I mean, Texas A&M only had 44 yards in the middle of the third quarter. It's
crazy.
They came out and just completely stomped Texas A&M through those first three quarters and really the whole entire game.
Yeah.
It was about as impressive a win as they could have managed in that situation. Texas A&M, 75 teams, I mean, the only teams they've lost to are top 10 teams. This isn't just like it's some middling SEC program. And they played Georgia tightly. Georgia was only able to score against them really by field goal throughout the entire game. But that was about as complete a game as LSU could have offered. And complete is the word that the College Football Playoff Committee said that LSU wasn't when bumping up Ohio State above them. So certainly a statement win for LSU to close out its perfect regular season.
It's amazing how these two teams played the game that they played just a year ago and how there were so many comparisons and how close they were. And now it's like a Grand Canyon size gap, it seems like, between the two teams.
Between Georgia and LSU?
No, Texas A&M and LSU.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't know distance-wise or whatever you have you. I mean, Texas A&M, they're building their recruits. They've still got momentum. I think the team's talent overall regressed from last year to this. I think the defense still plays pretty well, but you know, that was a talented team last year, and I think they got their spots then, and they got a little of them now. But I mean, Kellen Mond was one of those that I expected maybe to progress a little more. He did seem to regress this season when you look at his numbers and his performance. But I mean, the other thing you can look at too is, you know, A&M may have just been about the same, and LSU is certainly much better this year than they were last year. So I mean, there's just other teams that have taken a step forward, and A&M hasn't quite gotten there yet. I don't know if that means they're left behind, because I think Jimbo Fisher still is well-liked in Texas and has been recruiting well. But, you know, there's certainly LSU certainly has a lead on this right now.
Just a very special, special LSU team, and the defense has got to find – I mean, the confidence they must have now in themselves going up against a team in Georgia that's quarterback – doesn't run very often. They got a great, good running back. They've lost some wide receivers. It's a team that plays a lot, relies on their defense an awful lot. I just see LSU's defense really coming to the forefront now after what they did against A&M.
That was something they were talking about a lot after the game, was how much they've been criticized. Jacoby Stevens said, you wake up Wednesday morning and they weren't number one anymore. And he was like, oh, how do we get to number two? So they went and they found those criticisms of them, and they took that personally. Caleb on Chason said he didn't deal with it very well at all, and he had to rely on the other players to really, step into it. They really used that as motivation, further motivation to already being picked off by Texas A&M last year. And I think this also came together. You got two good motivations for that, but also the game plan defensively against Texas A&M looked to work quite well. Dave Aranda, who's been taking a lot of heat recently, and justifiably so with some of the numbers that were there, had all his pieces back. Grant Delpit was about as healthy as he's been in a long time, but he found a new piece in the secondary with Maurice Hampton, the way that he played against Arkansas. And I got a game film up on theadvocate.com that shows how he was used. When A&M came out, what they like to run the ball with, what's called 12 personnel. They bring in an extra tight end. It's two tight ends and a running back. Or they bring in an I formation or whatever. And Kerry Vincent would sub out. He's kind of their covered nickel safety. And then Maurice Hampton would come in, and he made a couple of big stops. And is that a little predictable? Maybe. But whenever Texas A&M figured out, they tried to pass the ball when Maurice Hampton was in, and they couldn't get much. And whenever they tried to run out of those packages when Kerry Vincent was in, they couldn't do much there either. So I think they found a nice piece there. And the defense is certainly has more depth going into the postseason than they're playing well. And they have that confidence back, that swagger that LSU defenses have had in the past.
No question. Brooks Cabino, well said of The Advocate. I thought the other big thing that came out of today's press conference was, and I know this is radio, but the video of it when talking about you're going to sit down with Joe Brady and map out what the future looks like for him at LSU, since there are a lot of programs wanting to speak with him. It was kind of a wink, a smile, and Coach O said, "We're a step ahead. I think we're in good shape." So they're going to do everything they can. I don't know who's out there interested. There's a lot of coaching jobs that are out there that are available now, several within the SEC and around the country, but they're going to do everything they can to try and keep Joe Brady.
Right. And so I reported this on the night of the Alabama game, that LSU was entering contract negotiations mm-hmm. with Joe Brady, and that's been happening since. And, you know, as Ed Ogeron said today, they're a step ahead from the conversations I've had since that night. I think that would be an accurate representation of what's going on. I think, yesterday there was some reports out of Austin that Joe Brady was a high-level right. choice for the offensive coordinator position over at Texas now, and that's kind of what stirred a lot of the talk recently. And I don't, from what I've heard and what I don't know, I don't think that's a concern right now. And I think Ed Ogeron showed as much confidence out front that, you know, he would be there. And just to talk outside of that, you know, just from a reporter perspective on this, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, LSU has a position where, you know, they're undefeated, and it looks like they've got a nice path for Joe Brady to step in and take a larger role over time. And, you know, I don't think money has been an issue in LSU's past. I mean, Dave Aranda is the top, the highest paid assistant in the country with $2.5 million, and that's made up a large, when you look at Ed Ogeron's contract, it keeps getting compared to all these other head coaches.
Right.
It's not that high because he's taken, you look at the percentage of what Dave Aranda's making, like almost 80% of what Ed Ogeron's making. That's
right.
Not common. So
no.
they've been able to spread the wealth a bit for Ed Ogeron to keep the coaches he wants. And I think they'll be loyal to that over time. But that's definitely something that's going to keep progressing through the SEC championship game and
yep.
towards the national championship and perhaps even after the season.
All right. Football season rolls on. Brooks, thank you, buddy. Take care. That's Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. We'll take a quick time out here. We'll come back with more. The Raging Cajuns are winners. We'll have Nick Fontenot to tell us all about that here on The Jordy Helfrich Show.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
You know, emotional day for our team. I think we kind of played that way, to be honest with you. I think there's going to be some things that we can learn from a poise standpoint. For this group of seniors, I can understand that. It should be emotional. But, you know, I'm happy. I'm happy for everybody involved in our team that we found a way to win that game tonight. It's going to be a special thing for the rest of the way.
Billy Napier, after a 31-30 win over the ULM Warhawks, a game in which Levi Lewis threw three touchdown passes and Stevie RT kicked a 27-yard field goal with a 1:21 to play, and then you had to hold on to your seat, bite your fingernails as Monroe missed the field goal, and the Cajuns win it. They're now 10-2 overall, 7-1 in Sun Belt Conference play. And they're heading back to Boone, North Carolina for the Sun Belt Championship game Saturday at 11 a.m. against App State, a team that they're very, very well familiar with. Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser, he's been all over 103.7 The Game, and I greatly appreciate him spending some time with us today, this afternoon. Nick, thanks for the time, buddy. You getting comfortable over there?
Oh, yeah, man. It's becoming fun, and it's a fun time for all the Louisiana football. Cajuns, LSU, Saints, everybody's having success. It's a great time to be covering these teams right now, Jordy.
Yeah, unprecedented success for the triumvirate. Absolutely. Wow. I didn't see a 31-30 game, but I guess, you know, not to be cliche-ish, but throw the records out. These two teams don't like one another, and they bring out the best in each other. Must have been a heck of a football game.
Yeah, it was a really good football game. And like I said last week when we were talking about the game preview, and it, you know, this game is bizarre. I mean, strange things happen in this game every single year, and this year was no different with the you had two 99-yard drives from each team. I mean, you don't see that, you know, on a daily basis. And for each team to get to go 99 yards in the same game, it was bizarre. And, many bizarre things happen in this game every single year. And you know, like you said in the open with Stevie RT going down to kick that field goal to take the lead and then having to go all the way back down and thinking you're probably going to lose the game. I mean, a 35-yard is almost a chip shot, and it just goes wide left, and the Cajuns are elated. So, yeah, I guess you throw out the records. I mean, there's not a lot of hatred in this rivalry. It's not a real heated rivalry, but mm-hmm. it's one of those games where they always play well against each other. They always bring the best out of each other, and that's what happened Saturday night at Cajunsville.
Nick Fontenot, the advertiser, kind enough to join us. I said the difference in the game would be Levi Lewis if he played well. Well, golly, he 15 of 23, 270 yards passing, no interceptions, three touchdowns. Boy, I just keep saying it week after week after week. He is the difference maker. I know you got a good defense. I know you got a good running game. But now you got a quarterback, and he seems to be getting better and better. And that's why, even though it's going to be cold, maybe snowing, I just think it's a different Cajun team that App State's about to face.
The one thing that all the players and coaches and everything, everybody is saying when you talk about Levi Lewis and his biggest improvement is his decision making. I mean, we always knew that he had a decent enough arm to get the job done and make the throws that he needed to throw. And we know that he had the weapons around him to make this offense move, but his decision making was the one thing that he needed the most work on. And from all accounts, he's improved that tremendously, and you can see it on the football field. I mean, he's tucking and running at the perfect times, and it's something that Billy Napier doesn't really like in his offenses for his quarterback to, you know, not sit back there in the pocket. He wants him to throw the football first. But Levi Lewis has that special skill set where he can get out of the pocket and make positive yards with his feet, and he's doing that well. And then when he throws the football, he's extremely accurate, and he's hitting his receivers in stride and putting the ball where it needs to be for the offense to move. So his improvement has been very impressive to see and watch throughout this year. And I think at this point in the season, which is the point in the season where you want your players to be playing at their best, I think Levi Lewis is absolutely playing at his best, and he's leading this football team to places that's never been before.
You bring up a great point. In big games, your best players have to play their best. You had Lewis with his numbers. Jamarcus Bradley had 127 receiving yards and a touchdown. Elijah Mitchell, 102 yards on the ground. Raymond Calais, 107, including an 83-yard touchdown run. Those are your best players. They played their best in the biggest moment, and that's why you win.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Jordy. It's exactly what you said. All those players that you mentioned, all those playmakers are coming up big in these big moments. And you have some of these players that you're mentioning, like Jamarcus Bradley and Raymond Calais and those players. They're amongst the best who have ever done it at Cajun Field, the best who have ever played for this program. And to be able to watch them perform on a weekly basis at a high level is very nice. And, you know, it was nice to see a decent enough crowd that made a lot of noise at Cajun Field on Saturday night, and they were able to come out with a win.
All right, Nick Fontenot, the advertiser. Now we move on. I saw pictures of Boone, North Carolina today. They had a shot of the playing field where the Sun Belt Conference Championship will be next Saturday, and there was snow all over the place. I know it's cold in Acadiana today, but it ain't no snow, and it's not that cold. What is it? Give me your takeaway. What makes App State so good most of the time? They proved they were mortal because they lost a Sun Belt Conference game, but what makes them so good?
I think it's their coaching, Gar. I think they have amazing coaching, amazing discipline, and of course they have the players, and you know they're the gold standard in the Sun Belt, and they continue to get high recruits and get good recruits to go there because they have a little bit of a cachet. Their name holds a little bit of weight within college football, so they get, you know, a little bit maybe better player than the average team, but their coaching staff puts them in the best position to succeed. And when you have players like their quarterback, whose name escapes me, I want to say it's Zach. I forget it right now, but
I know his name. He's good, though. I know that
he's an extremely good player, and when you get him in the right position and put him in position to be successful, you know that's what he does, and he's a quarterback that's going to give them fits, similar to what Caleb Evans did, the ULM quarterback did Saturday night at Cajun Field. The App State quarterback is going to do the exact same thing. So I like that the Cajuns were able to have that game against Caleb Evans. It kind of prepares them a little bit for what they're going to face. And also, you know, having played App State earlier in the year and really had a legitimate chance to win that game. And one game that, if you talk to a lot of people, a lot of Cajuns players, they really feel like they let that one slip away. So they're motivated. They're motivated by a lot of different things right now. And I think going up to Boone, North Carolina, playing their best football, they're going to have their best chance to ever beat App, I think, coming up this weekend.
Defense maybe took a step back against Monroe. I don't know, but how improved is this team now with the second go around against App State compared to when they first played them at Cajun Field early in the season?
Yeah, the defense last Saturday against ULM was very depleted. They were without Zion Hill. They had Percy Butler was out in the secondary, and then Cameron Solomon got ejected in the first half with a targeting penalty. So it left them very depleted. And so their snap counts got up high, and they got a little fatigued. And you could tell towards the end of the game they were really feeling that. So, you know, I don't know how much we can, you know, attribute what happened Saturday to, you know, a defensive deficiency, for what you, if you will. But as far as their improvement, I mean, they're just consistently getting better. It's so cliche to say things like we want to get better every day and we want to improve every day. And it just seems like this team is. I mean, every single week, You see him just do things a little crisper. We're talking about Levi Lewis. He throws the ball a little bit more consistently, and you see the running backs hitting the holes a little faster, and it's all paying off. And it's film room work, it's weight room work, and it's all coming together. And you know, I don't know what it's like to play football at the college level. I didn't do it, but you could tell that these guys are putting a lot of work into it, and it's paying off for them on Saturday. So it's been really nice to see a team get better and better each and every week, and that's exactly what the Cajuns did this year.
I've got a sneaky feeling, if not already, there are going to be several athletic directors and search firms watching this game very intently. There's openings at Ole Miss. There's openings at Missouri. There's an opening at UT San Antonio. There's openings here, there, and everywhere, and I got to believe Billy Napier might be on the radar screen of some of these people.
Yeah, I mentioned that this morning when I filled in for RP3, and it's a topic that a lot of people around the program, they don't want to talk about. They just want to ignore it or just wait till it happens and then face it. But it's one of those things where if you go to Google right now and just type in the name Billy Napier, you don't even have to type any other words after that. Just his name, Billy Napier. The first 7 or 8 articles that pop up are his name on lists for coaching vacancies, be it Ole Miss, be it Arkansas, be it Missouri. Like, his name is on the list. Now that's not saying he's a legitimate candidate for the job. It's just saying that his name is being talked about for these jobs. So it's a topic of discussion that should be discussed. And if you're the administration behind making the hires and making the decisions, you need to have a game plan in place just in case this happens. I mean, if it's my personal opinion, I think he stays one more year. But that's not guaranteed. I mean, somebody could come up with a nice offer and scoop him up, and you don't want to get caught with your pants down. So I'm assuming that Dr. Brian Maggett and all those guys that made the decisions out of UL, they're aware of it, and they know what's going on, and they have a plan in place if that were to happen. But absolutely, Jordy, Billy Napier is one of the hottest names in coaching right now.
Let me ask you one question. Levi Lewis, is he coming back next year? Is he where is he class-wise?
I don't think he's going to be able to come back. I think this was his last year.
This is his last year? Uh-oh.
Yeah,
uh-oh.
Clint may know a little
you know
more
what,
about
that. You know, coaches and good quarterbacks, they got to go hand in hand. I'm just saying, think about that when these lists come up with his name on it. So just be careful. Just be careful. We will see. All right, Nick, greatly appreciate the time, buddy. Thank you, as always.
All right, Joey, thanks for having me, man.
All right, Nick Fontenot of the Advertiser. So not only let's give some love where love is deserved, okay? We talked about LSU playing in the SEC championship game, the Raging Cajuns in the Sun Belt Conference championship game. Well, the Southern University Jaguars out of Baton Rouge, they'll be playing in the SWAC championship against Alcorn this Saturday. We've got two FCS playoff teams still rolling from the state. You've got Southeastern, a winner. They'll be taking on Montana in Montana. How cold is that going to be? And Nicholls State will be at North Dakota State. I think that's a dome. I think that's a kind of a mini dome. But so what a great year of football in the state of Louisiana. Spectacular. Spectacular. And that brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. The Tigers will be traveling to Atlanta. Now, they'll fly, but that equipment truck, that goes via the highways and the byways. And that means Greg Stringfellow and his staff will get all the equipment necessary for the Tigers on the road with a Peterbilt truck because it's the most reliable, dependable, most comfortable. It's the best. It's the goal of every truck driver to own a Peterbilt truck. And we've got Peterbilt of Louisiana with locations in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. New, used, we lease them. We've got a service department. We've got a parts department. Be the best. Drive the best. Drive a Peterbilt truck from Peterbilt of Louisiana. Back after this.
To the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Frankie's ecstatic. All his favorite teams are doing just great. They're doing great, and he's got everything to make your stop all the more pleasurable, enjoyable, and satisfying because he got everything. Cleanest restrooms and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger ever. Everything fresh, cooked to order, ready to go. You can dine in or take it to go, get in the car, and hit the road, Jack. DC's Little Capital Exxon. Man, it was a great night in Tiger Stadium. It really was. Packed house. A&M didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance. The defense had their best night of the season, 6 sacks, gave up 169 total yards. The Aggies were only 2 for 13 on third down. And if you want to get off to a fast start, your defense forced A&M to punt on their first 7 possessions. They took that knocking down off the number 1 spot to the number 2 spot in the College Football Playoff Committee poll to heart, and they came up, and they attacked. The defensive backs were terrific. They pressured the quarterback, and A&M just didn't have a chance. Offensively, just another night, and it's just absolutely remarkable what this team has done. They've had a record for points in the season with 584. They scored 50 points, a record 6 times, out of the 12 games. 6 out of 12, they scored 50. They scored 40 or more points 10 times. That's another school record. Joe Burrow individually, no one in the SEC has ever passed for more yards in a single season. He passed up Timmy Couch. He's tied for passing touchdowns with 44. Well, he'll break that record in the SEC championship game. Remarkable. What a player. What a season. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 1,233 rushing yards. He leads the SEC in rushing touchdowns with 16. Two 1,000-plus-yard receivers. Ja'Marr Chase should win the Biletnikoff Award. Terrific. And you cannot say enough about the kid, Cade York. The first time an LSU kicker has hit 2 50-plus yard field goals in a game. Wow. Wow. What a deal. The best running back in the country is going to make his announcement of where he's going to attend school, Zach Evans out of Houston, on Wednesday. All reports are he's coming to LSU. LSU hasn't signed a running back this year. They've held out waiting for him. The recruits just keep coming and coming and coming. It's a special time. And I think it's been built to last. And I think Ed Orgeron has cemented himself as the perfect guy at the perfect time for the job of the head coach at LSU. I mean, he beat Tom Herman. He got over the Bama hump, and he just thwarted Jimbo Fisher. He's won 37 of 46 games, 80% since taking over. In 2017, they were 9-4, ranked 18th in the country. Last year, they improved to 10-3 and 6th in the country. And now, of course, this year, they're 12-0 and they're number one in the land. His recruiting ranks in the SEC his first year, he finished 3rd, 7th in the nation. In 2018, after that 9-4 season, they finished 5th in the SEC, 15th nationally. Last year, they finished 4th in recruiting in the SEC, 5th in the country. They keep getting better and better. And this year, they're the number one ranked recruiting class in the SEC, number 2 nationally, with all indicators pointing to LSU being the number one recruiting class in the country. Orgeron set this thing up for an extended run of success, much like LSU experienced from 2001 to 2011, when LSU had 7 top 10 finishes to go along with 2 BCS titles. You know, LSU hasn't had a native son running the program since Jerry Stovall stepped off the field for the final time in 1983. In the 36 years since, they've had respected coaches like Bill Ansbarger and Jerry DiNardo. They've had revered coaches like Nick Saban and Les Miles, and they've had reviled coaches like Curly Hallman and, to be honest, Nick Saban again. But none of them have been truly beloved. It's hard to hire from within. It's hard to search for coaches with ties to the glory days. Just look at Ann Arbor, Michigan. The Wolverines haven't found the success that they expected with their Michigan man, Jim Harbaugh, on the sidelines. But you see, Ed Orgeron's been successful because he understands and respects the past, but he doesn't live in it. He's proven to be nothing if not adaptable. Whether it's assembling his coaching staff or adjusting his approach and philosophy to the game. Coach O has proven he belongs among the very best in the game today. Oh, his relationship with his players is genuine. You can see it. You can feel it. He cares about them. He cares about the success, their success. And in turn, he gets more than a buy-in. He gets a belief. Players telling him after the game, thank you, coach, for everything. Thank you. Now, LSU has that slogan, forever LSU. I don't think that's a phrase that he just says. I think that's a phrase in a way that he lives, forever LSU. Special coach on a special team in a special year. Man, it's been something. Hasn't it? It has been something. Joe Burrow's been great. He'll be the second Heisman Trophy winner in LSU's history. And that number 9, they'll love him forever. But his time at LSU's nearing an end. Don't you get the feeling Ed Orgeron has really just begun? Hour number 1's in the books. Hour number 2 straight ahead. Bob Rose will join us. The Saints facing their big moment this Sunday. And Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. Lots of coaching openings around the country. We'll talk all about it. Hour number two of the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, next.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Two of two, and away we go. Happy Monday, December 2nd, the year 2019. I hope each and every one of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and now it's back, and off we go. And what a weekend it was for our teams, right? And we can pat ourselves on the back, we can boast, throw our chests out, and be happy, because LSU, the Raging Cajuns, and the Saints were all winners over the weekend. They all three won their division, SEC West, Sun Belt Conference Division, and the NFC South. And now it's off to bigger and better things. LSU will be in the Mercedes-Benz, I call it the Georgia Dome, Saturday, 3 p.m. kickoff against Georgia. And boy, 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 what a matchup. That's a 3 o'clock game. Listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game, with the pregame going on at 1 o'clock. Earlier in the day at 11, the Raging Cajuns will take on App State for the Sun Belt Conference Championship in Boone, North Carolina. And then we wrap up the weekend on Sunday, high noon, in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, Saints versus the 49ers, both at 10-2. And boy, this is a big one. So we got a lot to talk about all week long, but congratulations to all of our teams and all of their fans through thick and thin that are there. And it's been a great, great, add it up. Between the three teams, 32-4 is their combined record. You take that every day of the week and twice on Sunday. We do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, if you don't mind.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Mr. Domain, how are you feeling as a proud Raging Cajun alum?
I'm feeling pretty darn good, Jordy. You're talking about all the stuff that happened over the course of the Thanksgiving break, and man, just a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think we love alliteration here at 103.7 The Game. So how about this, Jordy, to kind of start things off? You've okay. got food, family, football for Thanksgiving. Then you have turnovers, Taysom, Tuttle, highlight in Thursday night football. And then it's just W. We're talking about win. LSU, win. Saints, Cajuns. It seems like that's all they do these days.
It was a great weekend. All three teams played well. I think the Cajuns made it a little bit too close for comfort, but LSU dominated. And if the Saints could ever recover an onside kick, it wouldn't have even been close. So, look, they're still teaching lessons there to be made for all the teams. But, boy, you sure like to teach them after wins. And, boy, like I said, 32-4 overall between the three. That's amazing.
It's absolutely amazing, Jordy. And before we kind of get into what happened with LSU A&M and what happened with Cajuns UL Monroe, I need to get your thoughts on it, Jordy. The Saints-Falcons game on Thursday night, I think obviously we're going to just stick more towards that Shy Tuttle interception. Was that one of the greatest things you ever seen? How he just stiff-armed Matt Ryan almost into oblivion, almost ended the man's whole career with one stiff arm.
It was, I don't know, what do you say? It's gone viral and all that kind of stuff. That was a phenomenal play, and that just goes to show you how big, how strong these football players are. Matt Ryan's not a little kid, and he just pushed him aside like it was nothing and just knocked him down. That was a great play. But Saints did what they had to do. Taysom Hill was spectacular, and then Taysom Hill comes in Saturday, and he comes to Tiger Stadium. He watches the game there. I see Chris Paul there, J.J. Reddick's there. Everybody's hopping on the Tiger train, and they had Marcus Allen there with John Robinson giving the team kind of a talk beforehand. So it was a who's who list. It was a great night in Tiger Stadium, packed to the rafters, and it was a lot of fun, I got to admit.
It seems like it was a ton of fun at Tiger Stadium, and I can about imagine it was just entertaining as all get out to see 50-7 victory, and everybody stayed in their seats for the entire game, which it felt like, Jordy, I just want to get your thoughts on it, because you were there, I was at Cajun Field. Was it me, or did that game go incredibly fast?
Boy, you know, you're right. It was quick. I didn't think about it at the time. It went quick. Look, the bands were terrific. The marching band for Texas A&M is spectacular. The precision. Nobody left halftime so they could watch them play. It was unbelievable, the steps that they make and the formations. It was terrific. On the field, LSU dominated, completely dominated. And the Burrow tribute before the game with the spelling of the jersey with the EAUX, it was a spectacular night from start to finish. 12-0 and rolling on into the SEC championship game. It's been a great year. Spectacular year.
It's been a fantastic year, and it's not over yet. And I think the best part of it all, Jordy, this past weekend was the fact that for the first time since 2008, a team from Alabama isn't going to be involved in the national title talk. How good does it feel right now, Jordy?
Wow. Feels great. Feels great. This really opens the door for a Utah team. I think this is what the playoff committee was hoping for, praying for. Now the question is, what happens if Georgia beats LSU? Then what happens? And Ed Orgeron said it right. We're not even thinking about that. We're focusing in. It's Tell the Truth Monday, and we're getting ready for Georgia. And we're going in there to win, and then we'll see what happens after that. So, but no Bama. Bye-bye. And poor Nick. Nick looks old, man. He looked old. Looked tired.
He really did look tired. Then again, when you're just kind of yelling your head off at him on a bad substitution, sometimes you definitely can show your age a little bit. That being said, and you know, we're talking about the college football playoff rankings. If Georgia winds up winning, I think this is how it could wind up going, Jordy, when it comes down to it, when you just look at the rankings and everything else holds chalk. If Georgia wins, it'll be Ohio State 1, Clemson 2, LSU 3, and then number 4, actually, 3 will be Georgia, 4 will be LSU.
Yeah.
But to me, I think you're right.
I think you're right.
I think everything's going to hold chalk, though. And I think we see LSU take that top spot back with the win over Georgia. The Bulldogs go to, let's say, 6 or 7, and then we move on, and it'll be LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3. The number 4 will be either Utah or Oklahoma, depending on how those two games go.
I'm really curious to see what the playoff committee comes up with tomorrow. I know Ohio State beat Michigan.
I beat them like a drum.
But I'm not sure Michigan's all that good, to be honest with you.
They weren't.
They're okay. But LSU, I mean, dismantled A&M. And A&M played Georgia really close. They probably should have beaten Auburn. Alabama beat them pretty handily, but we saw what LSU did to Alabama. So I'd be curious to see. Maybe LSU doesn't leap over Ohio State just yet, but maybe it's a lot closer. And I think if they beat Georgia, fourth-ranked team in the country, LSU gets back to number one.
I'd agree with you wholeheartedly there. And then, of course, Black Sunday happened yesterday, and we're talking about the SEC. My goodness, it feels like the carousel's back up and running after a year where things stayed relatively stable. Now, Arkansas fires their head coach. Mizzou, they fire their head coach. Ole Miss, surprisingly, I think everybody was surprised at that one, the Ole Miss Rebels firing their head coach. So the question to you, Jordy, is which vacant SEC job in your mind is the most attractive?
Ooh. Golly, I don't like it. I'm not sure. That's a tough question. Man, I don't think Missouri is. I think it's hard to recruit in Mizzou.
I can imagine it's hard to recruit in Missouri.
It's hard to recruit in Arkansas. It's hard to recruit in Mississippi. I don't know, man. I don't think I can come up with one that's the most attractive.
For me, I'd go Ole Miss because to me, I feel like the recruiting base in the state of Mississippi, it's still pretty good, and you're able to kind of work around it because, in fact, you've got Ole Miss, and you get Mississippi State, who's in a relative down year. You've got, I mean, outside of that, who else in Mississippi is really going to take away a big-name recruit? I think that's where you're at right now.
Let's put it this way. I think the team that will be the best next year, short-term, will be Ole Miss because they got a lot of young kids they're playing that'll be back.
Arkansas is just garbage.
Unless they transfer. Apparently, they all walked out of the meeting with the athletic director. They were ticked off about that. So, who knows? All I know is it's a great time to be a Tiger, baby. That's all I know.
It really is, Jordy. It's an amazing time to be a Tiger and also a great time to be a Saint. We talked about it with the win over the Falcons. My goodness, how great was it to see the Ravens get the dub and take down those 49ers in what felt like a Super Bowl preview, but man, I think now I can say right here, right now, we can see Lamar Jackson and the Ravens be on the other side of that Super Bowl bracket coming out of the AFC, especially after what we saw with the Texans beating the Patriots. Yeah. How about that play, that the option, DeAndre Hopkins to Deshaun Watson? That was one of the craziest plays I've seen in a long time.
I love it. Those running quarterbacks always have something in their sleeve against Belichick. So, Baltimore's 10-2. Patriots are 10-2. Saints and the Niners are 10-2. Green Bay 9-3. So watch out tonight. Minnesota and Seattle is a huge, huge game to close out Monday Night Football. It's a big one. So keep your eyes on that one. But Saints, Niners in the dome. It'll be rolling. Foam in the dome on Sunday. We'll talk more about the Saints. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, next. And those are your hot topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Did you put some on some of your Thanksgiving feast? Because if you did, you know what I'm talking about. If you didn't, I'm sure it was great. Could have been even better. Finest spices, finest peppers, do yourself a flavor. Take some Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Hey, welcome back. We've talked about the Tigers. We've talked about the Raging Cajuns, and now it's time to talk about our beloved New Orleans Saints, who head into Sunday's big matchup with the San Francisco 49ers. Both teams 10 up, 2 down, with home field advantage on the line if you take care of business the rest of the way. Bob Rose, kind enough to join us again on this Monday from Canal Street Chronicles. Robert, hope you had a great Thanksgiving, buddy. How are you?
It was really, really good, Jordy, and anytime a Thanksgiving can be capped off with an NFC South championship over a bitter rival makes for the best dessert. I hope you and your family had a great Thanksgiving as well.
We did. Thank you. Can I hire you as the onside kick return team, please?
I was really worried about every member of that hands team and every member of that special teams coaching staff. The way Coach Payton, I thought his head was going to explode. But my goodness, I mean that was inexcusable and undisciplined, and made the game obviously a lot closer than what it should have been.
Other than that aspect, Saints basically controlled the game. I mean, they took control. The defense was all over Matt Ryan. Sum up the game for me.
Exactly the way you put it. They flipped the script on what Atlanta did to them a couple weeks earlier. New Orleans won the game in largely the same way that they have won games all year long. The defensive line, like you said, just dominated from whistle to whistle. I actually thought that that was their best game of the year between the pressure that they got on Matt Ryan. Forcing him, even when they weren't getting him to the ground, they were forcing him on the run on seemingly almost all of his pass attempts. The linebacking core, even when Kiko Alonso and A.J. Klein were nicked up, Demario Davis played out of his mind and kept the cohesiveness of that unit together. And I was really, really impressed with the Saints' offensive line, especially that left side with two backups playing in place of Andres Pete and Teron Armstead. And that's obviously going to be a key and a highlight to the game this coming week against a very, very tough San Francisco defensive front.
No question. Of course, the play everybody's talking about is my main man, Shy Tuttle, and his stiff arm on Matt Ryan. That was fun.
Yeah, it sure was. That's going to be a meme in social media for the remainder of Saints-Falcons rivalry days. But I'll tell you what, I thought Shy Tuttle played one heck of a ball game even outside of that. Throughout the first half, he was getting good penetration. These Saints defensive coaches really, really like him. He's earning more snaps as the year has gone along and has just strengthened an already very strong defensive tackle rotation. They don't blink an eye when he steps into the game and allow a Sheldon Rankins or a Malcolm Brown or a David Onyemata to take a couple snaps off. Shy Tuttle is playing terrific football.
He is Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Before we talk about Saints 49ers, Saints fans ought to closely watch the Vikings and Seahawks on Monday Night Football tonight. I mean, those are two teams. One's 9-2, one's 8-3. Your thoughts? We got the tiebreaker over the Seahawks, right? So don't we want them to win this thing?
That's a tough one. And you're right. The Saints do hold a tiebreaker over Seattle. So to use the old phrase, if the playoffs started today, if Seattle wins the game tonight, the New Orleans Saints hold the top spot for the number one seed in the NFC playoff picture. However, there's still a long way to go. I actually like Seattle in this game over Minnesota. I think they're the Russell Wilson factor. He is just a tremendous quarterback and is playing at an MVP level. And Minnesota is a little bit suspect in the secondary. But I do expect a close game, and I would not be at all surprised to see the Vikings come out with a win. Like you pointed out, they're 8-3, and every bit the contender that the Seahawks or the Saints or the 49ers are. It's a toss-up, and it's going to be a closely fought battle through those teams through the rest of the way.
Neither the rain nor the wind nor San Francisco's top-ranked defense could stop Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. Jackson weathered those miserable conditions, ran for 101 yards. Justin Tucker kicked the tiebreaker, a 49-yard field goal, as time expired to give the Ravens a 20-17 win over Sunday. And you could hear the screams on Bourbon Street from Saints fans on that one.
Yeah, you sure could. And you know what? I did expect the Ravens to win that ball game, but I expected them to win it by a couple of scores. I was both pleasantly surprised and a little bit terrified at how well the 49ers were able to go out to the 1 o'clock time zone and how well a football game they played. But speaking of MVP candidates, you got to put Lamar Jackson in that category too. I will be the first to admit I was wrong about him coming out of college. He is a tremendous athlete. I don't think anybody would deny that. But he's been far more accurate as a passer than what I had ever given him credit for. And he really kept those 49ers, that entire defense, both the front line and the secondary, he really kept them on their toes. But it opened up a couple eyes on how New Orleans might be able to beat them. Now, Drew Brees is not going to be rushing for 100 yards against the 49ers, but it just shows, the Ravens were able to keep that pass rush, that terrific pass rush, off balance by a balanced approach. So the Saints have to have that kind of approach coming into this football game on Sunday.
Saints have a little extra rest. San Francisco's facing their third straight game against the first-place team. They're going on the road yet again. Man, a fast start would be great, but how do you feel about the offensive line that's been a little bit depleted with no Andres Pete, no Teron Armstead? They seem to hold up against the Falcons.
Yeah, they really did. And this this 49ers front line is a lot better than Atlanta and much deeper as well. So the Saints offensive line is definitely going to be put to the test. Pete is still going to be out, as you mentioned. They're being a little bit tight-lipped on Armstead's status, although I would be surprised to see him play. I like the game plan that Sean Payton and company came out with. Three-step drop, get the ball out of Drew's hands quickly, so that way those linemen would not have to hold their blocks for any longer than they had to. You have to believe that the Saints are going to have that same kind of game plan, get Jared Cook, Michael Thomas involved in their shorter patterns early, and I expect a heavy dose of Alvin Kamara and even Latavius Murray in the screen game also.
I'm with you. He's Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles. I didn't realize, but Von Bell, he logged over 100 snaps in the win over the Falcons. It's almost an NFL record. 100 snaps? Really? Wow.
And I had no idea. Bell is often a stalwart on the special teams. But you're right. When you calculate that, the Falcons had the ball for 85 offensive plays. Didn't realize that Bell was in on all of them, but not surprising, not surprising at all. Can't have that. The defense does have to do a better job at getting the opposing offense off the field. Now I realize, a bulk of those Atlanta plays would come on extended drives a little bit later in the game when they were playing in lax pass coverage and the onside kicks didn't muff ups the defense any favors as well. Von Bell is having a Pro Bowl year. He has played his best football since becoming a New Orleans Saint. It is a shame he's coming up on free agency, but just focusing on this year, he is one of the most underrated players on that fine Saints defense.
Taysom Hill was spectacular. Michael Thomas does his thing. And then I see Saturday night, I'm in Tiger Stadium. There the two of them are. Watching LSU dismantle Texas A&M, so it was great to have those guys supporting LSU as LSU supports them. It's just a special, special year for these teams.
Yeah, it really is. Both the Saints and LSU are on the cusp of truly something special. And if I'm not mistaken, the college national championship game is in the Superdome.
Yes.
So that would add a little bit more flavor to it. It's hard to wrap your mind around both LSU and the New Orleans Saints, winning the world titles in their prospective sports, and just how much more of a party city New Orleans will become if and when that happens.
Just shut down I-10 and party from Baton Rouge all the way down to New Orleans, and there'd be no problem with it, none whatsoever. Bob Rose, give me an early prediction: Saints, Niners.
You pointed out that the Niners, third straight game against the division leader, second straight game coming out east. That's tough on anybody. They have proven to me anyway that they are no flukes, so they're going to give New Orleans a battle all game long. I don't expect either defense to give up a ton of points here, but I do think that New Orleans is more multidimensional on the offensive side of the ball than San Francisco. I'm going to go with New Orleans coming away with this one, 23-17.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. I hope you're right, my friend. Take care. Have a great week.
You too, my friend. Always a pleasure.
All right, thank you. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Lots of coaching options, opportunities out there. Next.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Always thrilled we can have our good friend, the lead college football writer of Sports Illustrated, Ross Dellinger, joining us on this Monday. It's that silly season, Ross. Coaching vacancies and rumors running rampant. You hear a rumor that Mike Leach has been hired by Ole Miss. Ole Miss says, no, we haven't. So, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Jordy. How you doing?
I'm terrific. All right. More impressive win, Ohio State over Michigan in Ann Arbor, or LSU at home over A&M? And I ask that as kind of an harbinger of what we could anticipate coming out tomorrow night from the College Football Playoff Committee.
Well, you know, just because Ohio State was on the road, and I think Michigan, I think anybody would tell you Michigan's probably a better team also than A&M, that was a better win, even though LSU certainly looked great, and that was probably its most complete game of the season. I just think you're probably not going to see a swap back at the one seed, at least not yet, I wouldn't think. I'd be surprised. But then again, I was surprised that we saw the swap so early after last week. But so, you know, the committee is full of surprises. So I would be surprised for sure if they did that. You know, and the AP poll is somewhat of a good indicator as well. You know, and LSU lost 10 more first place votes in the AP poll this past week. So, and Ohio State, of course, gained all 10. So that split now is that gap between the two is getting smaller and smaller. It was 54 to like 6 or 7, I think.
Right.
Now it's like a few 40. Couple weeks ago, and then last week it was 50-9, and then this week it's 40-19. So you could see the gap closing, and you know, the final poll obviously will be coming this Sunday, and it'll be I think that's where the swap, you could swap it back if it's something like, you know, a close, if Ohio State plays a close game and LSU really kind of not just blows out Georgia, but looks good defensively doing it, because defensively is what the committee made a note of, that Ohio State is much better. So you need Wisconsin to score some points against Ohio State and LSU to win in blowout fashion with a defense that's playing, that played, you know, played really well, maybe as well as it did against A&M, in order to have a kind of the switch back.
It certainly sets up, if they can win, Utah could be that team. If LSU take, if chalk goes and the higher seeded teams win, it certainly looks like Utah would be in and Georgia would be out. Is that how you're reading this thing?
You know, I think we have three options left here. It's either the Pac-12 champion Utah, it's either the Big 12 champion, either Baylor or Oklahoma, or it is, you know, a Georgia upset of LSU and then two SEC teams being in. So it's kind of one of the three that we have here, with Alabama losing kind of narrowed the focus a little bit. You know, the committee is going to have a tough time if Georgia does lose to LSU, in Utah wins in Oklahoma, beats Baylor, you're going to have two resumes there in Oklahoma and Baylor that are somewhat similar, but that I believe, when you look at the numbers, that the strength of schedule and quality wins and things like that, that Oklahoma's schedule is better. I think they have a stronger one. They've been above Utah in our rankings for a while, and I know a lot of coaches and a lot of people in the industry like Utah, like the way they play. And Oklahoma does have some holes. They've played some tighter games than Utah has, and part of that, I think, is because they played a little better schedule. So that is going to be an interesting decision. And however they go with that decision, you know, one side's going to be really angry. One conference is going to be really, really angry. And one conference is going to be breathing a sigh of relief at making it in as the four seed. So, you know, and then if LSU is upset by Georgia, Georgia will be in, and almost certainly LSU will be in. And then you're going to have two conferences angry.
Yes. So we know who the conference office and the commissioner is pulling for. We know it. They're pulling for Georgia.
Yeah, maybe. You know, though, good luck getting somebody to admit that to you. But I would imagine that Greg Sankey would love to see a double overtime win by Georgia. That would probably have the pecking order: 1 Ohio State, 2 Clemson, 3 Georgia, 4 LSU, probably. And that would be, but also you got to think about this. And Greg Sankey is going on record, and most in the SEC have, that they are against expanding the playoff. Well, if two SEC teams make the playoff again for the second in two major conferences are left out, we're getting an expanded playoff the next day. I mean, there will be absolute madness in college football circles. It'll be a riot by some of these people if 2 out of 3 years, you know, you have two SEC teams in three straight. It would be three consecutive years that two major conferences are left out. Because remember, Notre Dame got in last year.
That's right.
That left out a second Power Five. So it'll be three straight years of two Power Five team champions not making the playoff. And that, again, is a good way for expansion to come. So those rooting for expansion, root for Georgia, you know. And I don't think the SEC is rooting for expansion. So in a way, maybe they just kind of want to see the favorite win in LSU.
All right, he is Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. Can't find a copy of that Joe Burrow cover. I mean, they're gone. They're gone.
Yeah, they're popular, especially down here, aren't they? They are. Yes. It's interesting.
Sum up his season that you've witnessed in person and from afar.
His season?
His season. You've seen it in person. You've seen it from afar. Put it in your perspective.
It's when you look at the statistics, it just is jaw-dropping. Not necessarily, I mean, yes, you know, the yards and the touchdowns and the interceptions and all that are jaw-dropping stats. But the one that's really incredible is the completion percentage. I mean, it's insane. I think the guy's worst game this year, he had a completion percentage of like 72-71%. That was his worst game this year. That is incredible. And I think he's going to barrel through the NCAA record for single season completion percentage. In fact, he'd have to really be bad, you know, down the stretch. I think because now when you talk about numbers and things, it looks like he's heading toward breaking the record. So that's been it's just been unbelievable.
Yeah. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. What's the better job in the SEC? I was asked this and I couldn't come up with it. Ole Miss, Arkansas, Missouri. That's what I said.
You know, when you talk about it's one of those things. When you look at each job, how are you rating, you know, what the better job is? Is it just championships, you know, or wins? If you're rating it by that, you probably got to. If you're rating it by what's the place you can win championships, you know, quicker maybe or easier, you have to say Missouri because they're in the SEC East. I mean, and the East has been a little obviously more down than the West, so that would probably be the one. But at the same time, you're probably going to get a chance to have better players, and you're probably going to have more resources at Ole Miss. Just where they're located, the history, the program, the money there. It's tough though, man. They're both, all those three schools, along with Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. I mean, those five schools can be kind of put in a hat. I mean, take out Vanderbilt, I guess, but put those four into a hat and draw it out, and you're going to come up with, you know, tough jobs because of the conference and division they're all in. You know, if they were in most of the conferences, they'd be in the middle pack, upper pack, but not in the SEC. So those are all really tough jobs. I mean, you know, I would probably lean toward Ole Miss though, because I think the history of that program, the money there, the resources when it comes to football, you know, but you just gotta. You're gonna play Alabama every year. You're gonna play LSU every year. You're gonna play Auburn and Texas A&M every year. So you gotta go there knowing realistic expectations that if you had, if you have a 9-3, 10-2 season, you've done really well. You know, you kind of got to go there with the expectation that you're probably not winning a championship there. It's just going to be difficult. But of those three, I would lean toward that one.
Were you shocked Chris Peterson is stepping down as the head coach at Washington, 55 years young, is going to transition into a leadership advisory role within the athletic department?
I was stunned. I think everybody was. I think the guy's like 140 and 40 in his career there, something like that. He's really had it going well. They had a lot of expectations this year, and they really fell flat, you know, and I saw his statement. He was looking to recharge. You know, sometimes you get burnt out, and that's not to say he won't be back in a couple of years in some kind of other coaching job. But it is surprising when you see that happen. But you know, the college coach life, especially on the Power Five level, and it's sometimes not fun. You know, and you sacrifice time with your family, and you sacrifice in a lot of ways your life, your quality of life. And people get burned out, and it sounds like he is burnt out.
I'm with you, Ross Dillinger. You're down in Baton Rouge getting ready to cover this SEC championship game. You've seen Georgia. You've seen LSU. It seems to be great offense against great defense. LSU's defense looked pretty darn good against A&M. So where are you leaning in this thing?
Well, yeah, it's tough to see Georgia scoring with LSU. So they've got to keep the game under 20 points. You know, they got to keep it pretty low scoring, kind of like Auburn did, where you just kind of you allow some yards, but you keep LSU out of the end zone. You know, you play well in the red zone. That's kind of the only way I feel like I could see Georgia having a shot. They got to keep it low because I just don't think they can score with LSU. And now they're going to be out the first half. Their top two receivers will be out the first half, and then their top receiver, you know, will be out the second half too. One of them's out the whole game. The other one's out because of an ejection last week, the first half. So that'll hurt them. So I can't see them winning some kind of shootout like you could see Alabama doing or Texas. They're not going to be able to keep up. So they've got to have some turnovers. They've got to have a little bit of maybe a luck or just good red zone defense in order to have a shot. But I think it might be tight there for a while. But at the end of the game, end of the day, you know, in the fourth quarter, I think LSU's offense just too explosive. I don't think they can keep them under 20. Like they need to win.
I'm going to let you go now because I know you're heading over to Alec Box Stadium so you can get your slab of Tiger Stadium sod and bring it up to Washington, D.C. with you and plant your backyard. I know that's what you're going to do.
Yeah. Right, yeah, my backyard. Let me tell you what my backyard is. It's a hallway with carpet. That's my backyard in D.C.
Enjoy the SEC championship game. I'm sure that's where you'll be.
Yep, I'm flying from Baton Rouge to Atlanta on Thursday. So, yep, up here all week and then heading to Atlanta.
What kind of story? I mean, you've covered so many stories. What are you digging up this
week? I know. What else is – I know. What
are you digging up?
Right. I know, man. I'm not going to spoil it, but I'm going to tell you it's a story that has not been written about LSU football. And I've been wanting to write about it for a long, long time, and finally I'm getting the chance. So it'll drop on SI.com Thursday morning. I'm excited about it. And yeah, it's not much of the time you find a story that really hasn't ever been written. But it's about time that this story is being written.
So You're killing me. That is the ultimate teaser from Ross Dillinger. SI.com. We'll look for it on Thursday. Cannot wait. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy your time in the Deep South.
All right, Jordy. Thanks.
You take care. Thank you. Ross Dillinger. Yeah, LSU fans have a chance to go get some sod from Tiger Stadium there. They're taking up all the field. They're putting in a new drainage system, new irrigation system. and you can get some sod. So if you got nothing better to do between 4 and 6 o'clock today, you can go grab you a piece of history, an undefeated season, and say, hey, this Joe Burrow threw a touchdown pass to Ja'Marr Chase right here. Huh? There you go. All right, we'll take our final timeout of the day, and we'll come back and wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helpert Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, 53 minutes after the hour. Again, it was a great weekend. LSU was spectacular. Joe Burrow, just another great performance. They dismantled Texas A&M from the start. They gave Burrow some time. When he didn't have time, he scrambled. He made great runs on target yet again, threw for over 300 yards yet again in just three quarters of play. Three touchdowns. The defense took it to heart about what the committee said about the difference between LSU and Ohio State is Ohio State's defense is better. They wore that chip on their shoulder, and they erased that seven overtime nightmare from a year ago. And I believe if they wanted to, they could have scored 80. I really believe that. They were that dominating. So now it sets up, it'll be the best offensive and defensive line that LSU will face this year. That according to Coach O. Georgia's offense doesn't scare you much. It just doesn't. They've got Swift, the running back. How healthy is he going to be? Had a little shoulder problem. They got some absences at the wide receiver core. They rely on their defense. Defense has to keep them in the game. Defense has to create turnovers. So if LSU does what they're supposed to do and handle themselves like they have all year long, I see LSU winning this game. Georgia can't keep up with them. Jake Fromm's been around forever. Good quarterback, but he's not going to beat you with his legs. He's not. He doesn't have A.J. Green to throw it to. Not that type of wide receiver. So they're going to want to ground it, pound it, take time off the clock, keep LSU's offense on the sideline. So the defense has to do a really good job of getting three and out and getting off the field. So we'll see. Plenty of time to talk about all of that stuff. And we will, I promise you, in the days to come. Be a lot to talk about. And LSU will be leaving on Thursday for Atlanta. And with all the media responsibilities that they have and whatnot. All right, let's do our daily history lesson. It was on this day, December the 2nd, a special day in 1975, Ohio State running back Archie Griffin did something that no other player has ever done. He won his second consecutive Heisman Trophy. The only player to win the award twice on this day, December 2nd, the year 1975. Heck of a player. No question about it. Special time for him. Yes, indeed. All right. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great one. You share it with the likes of... He had a pretty good game yesterday. Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers is 36 years old. Louisiana's finest, Britney Spears, is 38 years old today. Nelly Furtado, 41 years old today. So happy birthday to them, and happy, happy birthday to you. If it's your anniversary today, oh, special day. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Tomorrow, more on the Sun Belt Conference Championship, more on the SEC Football Championship, and more on the Saints and 49ers. We'll be talking a lot of football this week. CD, job well done as always. Thanks to all of you for listening. to our partners that make it possible. Best radio station on the planet. Have a great afternoon. Come on back tomorrow. Same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helper. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.